Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast with me, Rory West, Cameron Christie.
Hello.
And Harry Tremaine.
Hello everyone.
So before we start the podcast, if you didn't see the tweet that we put out earlier, I'll just briefly explain the new format that we're going to try out this week that hopefully continues into the following podcasts. So what we're going to do is try and just streamline the podcast. We've been going pretty long the previous weeks. So we just kind of want to cut that down, focus on the key incidents and points of games. So streamline it. Hopefully it's fine. So we'll get stuck into it. And when I say that, I mean it this time. And we're going to start with the Battle of the Saints. St Johnstone 1, St Mirren 0. Stevie May notching the winner after 72 minutes for St Johnstone. A thoroughly deserving win for St Johnstone. Would you agree, guys?
Definitely.
Yeah, they dominated.
Yeah, I definitely would. I think this is a game that really suited St Johnstone because St Mirren didn't press them at all, didn't put them under any pressure, and yeah, they looked good in possession.
Yeah, I think, well, as we've seen so far, the games they've played already, St Johnstone, that they've been utilising this 3-4-3 or sort of 5-2-3 formation. And while it's not worked too well so far in some games, I think this is the best they've utilised it. Some of the overloads that they caught St Mirren out with in the wide areas was just... I absolutely loved it, I'm not going to lie. I think I tweeted out on my own account that it was the most I've enjoyed watching the highlights package so far this season.
I thought they definitely actually used the width that you do naturally get from a 3-4-3 a lot better in this game. But also on top of that, they just looked kind of up to the speed fitness wise for the first time this season. Maybe were able to play a much higher tempo throughout. But particularly Danny McNamara on the right hand side, I think he's a great little find from St Johnstone and really suits this system. Played some really nice interchanging passes with Conway. And actually, Jason Kerr got forward as well on the right hand side. So just goes to show they're starting to get a little bit more comfortable in their shape.
Yeah, I really like the combination between Kerr coming forward outside the right side of centre back and McNamara. It really exploited the wide areas of St Mirren, because I'm sure we'll get onto, they almost tried to match up to the three to back system, and it clearly didn't work. But you're obviously saying there about sitting off. There's a chance in the first half, and it's through the running of McNamara. I just can't quite pick a man in the box. The St Mirren at this stage have, I think, 7 or 8 players in the box, and you're just thinking, why are you all so deep? And they just sat, that was just the tail of the game. They just sat off them the whole time and offered nothing going forward.
Yeah, it was interesting you mentioned the crosses there. I think St Johnstone had I'll quickly just fire up the stat, but it was an insane number of crosses, I'm pretty sure, that they put into the game. 25 crosses they put in, and it seemed as though that the joy that they got so much joy out of that wide area. And you mentioned the chances in the first half. There's one I picked out with, you mentioned Craig Conway as well. I thought he was absolutely outstanding, looked like he's reaching sort of match fitness now, and he sort of drags some bodies out to the left-hand side and creates an absolute load of space for, I think it's Michael Halloran, who has a shot from range that goes wide. But yeah, it's the Danny McNamara, I thought, probably the best player on the day. And you said about St Mirren matching the shape up. I think they had Dermis on the left wing back, is that right?
And I think you might be right there, yeah.
And that just didn't work at all, and it played into St Johnstone's hands, and McNamara was able to play so high, forcing Dermis to defend more, I guess, and something he's not really used to. And yeah, that was so crucial in how dominant St Johnstone were in the wide areas.
And it almost ended up as three on one at times, with Kerr getting forward and Conway sticking out wide. It's the build up to the chance for Scott Tanzer that he slices wide, and it's one of them that you'd have much rather fallen to Michael Allen or Callum Henry or something. And it's just quick interchanges between McNamara, Kerr and Conway, and they get St Mirren get absolutely nowhere near them, and they are very lucky not to be 1-0 down at that stage.
Yeah, and I think as well as sorry, Haz, I don't know if you were trying to come in there, but as what you say, as well as being so impressive going forward, I thought they limited St Mirren to barely a chance in the game. I think the new striker for St Mirren, his name's completely just escaped me there. He had a half chance.
Yeah,
that's the one, Dennis. He had a half chance on the turn, but nothing really too troublesome for Parrish in goal. But yeah, you mentioned St Mirren matching them up there. I just thought that was... I know Goodwin's been as a manager for a few years now, but I thought it was quite a rookie mistake, to be honest. I don't know what his thinking was behind that.
The thing is, he's sort of... The thing is, like, his set-up with the sort of the 4-4-2 diamond-ish has been working so well this season. I don't know why you would think about changing it just to match up a team playing three at the back, and it's become a recurring theme. Obviously, St Johnstone have largely used a three at the back, and you look at teams like Hibs and Livingston as well, and it really bugs me when teams try to match them up, because it usually means it's going to be an absolute rubbish game, because you are playing one team's playing a system that's specific to countering their opposition, and it just ends up being pretty boring. This is one where St Johnstone took full advantage of people in unfamiliar positions.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you just said there, Christy. I think St Mirren don't really have the personnel to be playing that system in the first place. Like you said, Rory, as well, Dermouche in those positions just looked completely lost. And effectively, that's just taken one of your probably brightest attacking players on his day completely out of the game. I don't really understand what the threat that Jim Goodwin's seen from St Johnstone is up until this point. I think St Mirren probably should have been going into this game thinking that they were in the ascendancy, and St Johnstone haven't looked up to much so far this season. So why he's changed it, I'm not really sure at all.
Well, I'll tell you what the real threat is, and that was Stevie May. Something we all knew. We all knew he was a deadly finisher. But in fairness to him, it's a decent run for the goal. But I think most credit needs to go down to Craig Conway for that cross. That's if you mind the cliche, inviting as anything, a striker's dream.
Yeah, I really like the cross. I mean, it's the perfect area. In behind Sharon, I believe it is. But for me, he's made an initially decent run to cover for McCarthy, who steps up and doesn't quite win the ball. But you see him taking a couple looks round, and never at any time is he sure of where Stevie May is. And he just completely lost his bearings there and let Stevie May run off the back of him. And yeah, it's a really easy goal for May, but it'll build confidence for him, and I don't see why he can't get in the team, because Hendry hasn't been scoring goals.
Yeah, Hendry had that big chance in the first half, and I think it's one that a little bit more confidence he might have taken. But yeah, you obviously say that about May's run there. He makes his sort of change in direction quite early, so there's plenty of time for Sharon to recover, and he just doesn't. And I actually think he should be cutting the cross out from getting to May. I do think that he could probably stick a foot out and give away a corner. Okay, the position he's in, there's always the risk that he's going to put it in his own net, but he should probably know Stevie May's there anyway, so he has to deal with it. If he misses it, May's going to score anyway, so you may as well try and stick it a foot. Obviously, the best case scenario, you can either take a touch and clear it, or it goes out for a corner. Worst case scenario is what was going to happen anyway, which was a goal for St Johnstone. So I think it's actually pretty poor from Sharon, to be honest.
Yeah, poor
great
day.
Ball from Conway, to be fair. Like you said, very, very inviting.
Yeah, poor day all round for St Mirren, but a good win for St Johnstone that lifts them to seventh in the table and joint on points with St Mirren now, albeit St Mirren have a game in hand over them. We'll move on to Rugby Park next, where Kilmarnock beat Dundee United by 4-0. I think it's probably fair to say that we didn't really see this scoreline coming. Maybe the result could have been guessed, but yeah, saying that, I backed Dundee United in a coupon, so when I saw those notifications flying through of goal Kilmarnock, that was just a nail in the coffin. But yeah, we said before we came on, this was a kind of a weird game because despite losing 4-0, I don't think Dundee United were awful, but what were your thoughts on Dundee United's performance? Open up to either of you guys.
I didn't think they were. I agree with you, Bro, right there. I didn't think they were terrible. I think the same old problems came back to haunt them in that they weren't very. They didn't have a lot of penetration going forward. Again, for me, the wide men were the most dangerous, but they just don't have enough men making runs from midfield to support. The strikers just look a little bit blunt again. I think they were exposed a couple of times with balls over the top by Kilmarnock, who obviously set up in a 4-4-2 with a lot of physicality, were there for the battle and definitely won that battle. I didn't think they were awful.
They obviously had a lot of the ball, but I don't ever think they really, like we said, penetration. They never looked a massive threat. They had plenty of shots, but only ones on target, and they are at the moment struggling obviously for a finisher and a bit of creativity. We think back to, I know obviously the game was against Celtic, but they defended really well, but they just offered didn't offer too much going forward, and a big part of that is missing their main striker, but they probably need to add a little bit of creativity through the middle. I think guys like Pollock and Parks are great, full of energy, but perhaps not the most creative. If you think of what Pollock's best at is making runs in behind, he's probably not best at playing the ball through for a striker. So I think they still probably need to look at addressing that sort of creative midfield role, and desperately hope that they can get Shankland back after the break.
I was just kind of thinking the way that United set up, and you look back to the game against Hibs at Tannadice, and the fact that Killie started with two strikers up top, Brophy and Kabamba, and United went with four at the back. When Hibs did that with Doidge and Nisbet, United went with three, and I thought that kind of sort of matched up against the two forwards a wee bit better. I thought that Reynolds and Conley were left exposed at times. That's not sort of taking the any sort of anything away from quite poor performances from both of them, especially Connolly, but I'm not sure if that sort of tactical tweak could have helped them in getting a better getting a result out of this.
I think possibly, because if you look at the first goal, it all comes from the fact that Kabamba peels off of Reynolds onto Robson to get more sort of height advantage on his marker. That's this kind of thing where with maybe Reynolds as your left centre back, you probably would be Reynolds your left centre back. You don't quite have that. I know Reynolds is the biggest, but you don't quite have that same reach advantage, and that goal is perhaps a little bit more avoidable, and Reynolds can maybe make it a bit more difficult for Kabamba. But the fact that he's pulled off on a considerably shorter Robson gives him a much easier sort of leap to get an advantage, and to be fair, it is a really good header from Kabamba for the first one.
Yeah, I thought the decision to switch from what Dundee United have basically been lining up with this entire season, with the three at the back, was an odd one. Does kind of feel like Mickey Mellon's maybe trying to experiment a little bit in order to improve the attacking output from the team, but yeah, this... it's definitely a failed experiment based off of this game.
Yeah, you mentioned that Christy Kabamba opening the score, and he got two in this game. I thought he was, again, pretty impressive, and a tidy header for the first, and just kind of jumping forward a wee bit of the second. I know he's robbed Connolly. He's done. You can always praise the sort of hassling, but you often see that, and we'll talk about it later. Strikers missing these sort of one-on-one chances. Never the easiest, I guess, but slotted away pretty well. But sandwiched in between that was the second goal from Eamon Brophy. The first of the season, I think it is for him.
His first start.
Yeah, crucial that for himself and Killy that he's off the mark. A tidy enough finish, but it's just quite a basic goal to concede, really. It's just a sort of, isn't it just a looping header over the top of the defensive line? And there he is, just unmarked.
Yeah, I think, again, Dundee United seem to get caught out any time they try to be moving forward as a whole with the back line, and then the ball comes back in, and then a looping header, like you said, over the top. And they just don't have the pace to really deal with Brophy running off of them, and it's a good finish.
Brophy's got this tidy skill of always hitting the strikes into the in the sort of side netting, but Killer were pretty happy in the game to just give possession to Dundee United, something that we kind of doing for, I guess it's one of the Clarkisms, I guess, from that Dyer's taken on, but it worked pretty well for them. Dundee United had plenty of possession, plenty of shots, but didn't really create an awful lot. I guess, as you mentioned, Clarice, they didn't have their sort of key striker, but yeah, I thought the game plan from Killy was pretty effective.
Well, I was gonna say, Rory, that this game did kind of have that Steve Clark kind of shine on the performance. I thought the 4-4-2 suited Killy. I think they had their central midfielders doing a power of work for them. Like you said, didn't play with a lot of possession, but really hard working. I thought Greg Killy was really impressive for them as well, which is a big boost to get him in the team and performing well. Two assists on the day, so and obviously two strikers working well as a tandem.
Yeah, hopefully, like you say, I thought the strikers worked really well, and they worked really well the brief periods we saw them last year. But for Killy, hopefully he's gotten over all that sort of fitness problems he's had and can get a decent run in the team now, because he has shown when he's got the chance that he is sort of a creative outlet that Kilmarnock lack at times, with the exception of obviously Chris Burke.
Yeah, and we can't look at this game without touching on the fourth goal from Rory McKenzie. I actually don't think this is just a really nice finish. I think this is just a really good, well worked goal. A pretty efficient counter attack from Killy, but yeah, the finish is Messi esque, I guess.
It reminds me a lot of a goal maybe 2 years ago that Messi scored for his hat trick against Betis. Different side with his left foot, but it's just he strikes it with maybe ease. It just makes it look like it's so easy, and he's one of those players. I mean, Rory McKenzie, you don't exactly think of him with the sort of finesse and technique. You think of him more as a work rate player, but it's a fantastic finish. And I've seen all this sort of goal of the month stuff for this month. For me, this is nailed on. It's what I love from football. Great counter attack, and definitely the best finish of the month for sure.
Yeah, constant motion, and it's a wonderful finish. I did make the point prior to recording that Dundee United pushing so many men forward at that point of the game seems a little bit odd, but if it results in a goal like that, then as a neutral, I can't complain.
Yeah, and also four different sort of goal scorer songs, or whatever you would call them. So it was quite nice. I like that touch from Killy.
Some good banter with the La Bamba shout for when Bamba scored.
Yeah.
And also when Brophy scored, I thought it was going to be the NWO. Oh,
I was really hoping for that. I actually got a wee bit too excited about that, thinking no way are they going to bust out that. But yeah, fair enough.
I've heard sort of when Sky and things have done features with him, they tend to use like the Big Bad Wolf song.
Yeah, I was just waiting for that sort of piano key to drop, but we'll move on to the last of the 3 o'clock Saturday games. It was quite a tough watch, you could maybe say. But I guess that's since Gary Holt said that. Well, it's obviously Livingston 1, Ross County 0. But since Gary Holt said for Livingston to go back to basics, there's 2 clean sheets and there are 2 home games since. That's basics from Livingston, isn't it?
Yeah, this was prime Livingston, if you will. Made it really difficult, limited opposition chances, looked to go direct. From the little clips we've seen, I think that the new forward, who I've already forgotten the name of,
Lawrence Lacoch.
Yeah, Lacoch. I knew it was Koch something. But yeah, he looks to be sort of the right mould of replacement for Dykes as a striker. Big, physical, he's going to make a nightmare for defenders, might not score too many, but he fits the team very, very well from the brief things that we've seen so far.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely agree. And I think, I think as a team, Livingston outworked Ross County, who I thought were surprisingly sluggish. There was an instance first half with Vickers where he just outright refuses to go out and press Forrest, and it results in a really good chance for Pittman, which he probably should score.
Yeah, it's a bit of a setter, that one.
Yeah, I just thought Livingston were well worth the points, which were much needed.
Yeah, we mentioned them going back to basics, and I said that earlier on about St Johnstone putting crosses in the box and thinking that 25 was a lot, but actually Livingston launched in 45 crosses, so yeah, that's getting it in the mixer for sure. But we earlier in our group chat, Christy, you were saying you wanted to hammer managers for going for 3-5-2. Is Stuart Kettlewell rather on your radar?
Yeah. Definitely, and the irony of this was that Livingston didn't even play three at the back, so it was rendered pointless. But because he's played with two sort of orthodox fullbacks, you can't really change it within the game. You've got to wait probably till half time to save somebody getting royally embarrassed to make the change, even then it took him to 57 minutes and after the red card until he changed it to go four at the back. So yeah, he's in for my books. And like we said, this wasn't a particularly great game. Ross County were pretty dire, to be honest, and I think that's all because they've made that change to playing something that they've not played all season. We said that about St Mirren, I think Ross County actually as well. They've both gone pretty well so far this season. And I just don't understand why you would change what's been working, and especially in this game, because it's hugely backfired, because it was set up to counter something that didn't happen at all.
And again, similar to St Mirren, but in a different way, they've actually limited themselves by setting up that way, because Carl Tremarco at this stage is a very limited fullback, and if you're playing him as a wing back, that's even worse. You're not getting any utility out of that.
Yeah, and it exposes him massively. I mean, we know that he's got a definite lack of pace, and if you leave him basically 2-on-1 up against sort of Devlin and either Robinson or Forrest, depending on who's pulled out to what wing, you are very much leaving a guy who is probably past his best, past this level, leaving him isolated, and I mean, that's sort of telling with the fact that he ended up getting sent off.
Yeah, for a team that's predominantly played 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1 all season, I just didn't really get the switch to 3-5-2. I don't know if maybe it was a case of some players just kind of looking through unused subs like Harry Payton and Regan Charles Cook, guys you don't want to play on Astro or something like that. I don't know, that's just the easy excuse that would come to mind, but I think this is the worst count you've played all season. It was just
easily
all Livingston, and I don't know if this kind of came into Gary Holt's plans pre-match, but County had the worst record at defending set pieces last season, and I mean, you can kind of, I guess, chuck crosses from open play into that sort of situation, and they just looked so weak and vulnerable from them, and it was obviously where Livy were going to get some joy out of, even if it's in the second phase of play. But if Holt's looking for basic, going back to basics, I think this is exactly what he was after. Especially getting the goal from a set piece is just Livy all over, isn't it?
Yeah, the thing that really would bug me from a Ross County point of view is that the kind of the shortened to I'm struggling with names of some new players at the moment. Serrano, that had happened already in this half, and they got pretty close. It just happened to be Cole Donaldson getting in there before one of the other players did. So they were already alert to the short corner possibility of happening, and they just don't close it down anywhere near quick enough to stop it from coming in. And you know, Serrano fairly takes his time as well with the delivery. So it's not so it's been done really quickly. They've got plenty of time to, I think it's Mackay, to close down Serrano, and he just doesn't do it whatsoever.
Mm. Yeah, you mentioned Carlton Marco there. He's been a man of ridicule almost from us so far this season. Did himself no favours with the red card. Absolutely no complaints for him, you'd think. That is for the second yellow anyway. That's just that's straight up garbage defending from him.
His lack of pace is so abysmal at this point. That is, I mean, I don't think that Nicky Devlin is jet pace, but he's blown past him with these.
Jet heeled, even. there we go. But yeah, John Guthrie getting the winner for Livingston. Quite a nice one for me because I stuck him in the fantasy team, so that's a goal and assist, clean sheet rather, for some points, but still not going too well. But yeah, a bit of drama after the game as well. Stuart Kettwell sent off. I guess you could wouldn't have thought of this as much, but if this happened last season, they would have obviously had Stephen Ferguson to drop in as the co-manager, but that won't be the case this season. But yeah, you reckon it's for a foul in the build-up he's complaining about has to the goal?
Yeah, he's saying there's a foul for the goal. Guthrie's got his hands on the back. You can actually see it if you're on the BBC highlights package. On the thumbnail, you can see Guthrie's got his hands on the back of Stewart. For me, it probably is a foul. It's a bit unnecessary from Guthrie, probably, because I think he's favourite to get there anyway. But yeah, his hands are on the shoulders. For me, he's got a case to be made. Although I think a lot of his frustration comes from other areas. His team's performance was dreadful, but yeah, I think he does have a fair case to make here.
So it was Livy's first win of the season that lifts him out the relegation zone. Although only 6 games played, so we're still early in the season. But somehow a team that have a win so far this season, that's Hamilton, and we'll move on to them next. Another defeat at home to Rangers, 2-0. It was game over after 20 minutes. A feel for anyone that actually watched the second half live. I didn't watch it, so
I kept on in the background when I was playing Football Manager.
I think this would have been one to switch off at half time. Even though there was a couple of decent chances and stuff for Rangers in the second half, not an awful lot of excitement. But yeah, I'm quite confused about Hamilton's setup in this game. it seems as though that Rice kind of set them up with a low block with a sort of compact defensive and midfield line, yet there seem to be so many gaps appearing in behind the defence. I'm not sure how much blame I'm going to stick that to Rice, but I guess the players need to take a wee bit of responsibility there, because some of them were, especially in defence, were atrocious.
Pretty much. Yeah, it's hard to know what to say, because they just weren't they weren't at the races at all, even though you kind of expect the Rangers to bulldoze them, they weren't even close. Both the goals are super easy. And I thought it's almost patronising to hear the commentators say that a third goal would have been killing off the game, because Hamilton have only scored two goals this season, and the idea that they were going to go and score two, let alone three, against Rangers in the same game is madness.
This is a Rangers team who's not conceded the goal all season, and have only, I think, the most shots they've conceded in a game is something like five.
Yeah, exactly. Hamilton aren't the team that's going to be breaking them down. No offence to Ogunpo, but it seems as was it Winter that also played up top, or who knows what
and played off Ogunpo at times as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I don't really know who was playing where. It didn't really make sense at all. Hadji and Taverner with the goals. Really, Rangers should have won by more. I thought they were. You can definitely say they took their foot off the gas in the second half, but you never know how these title races are going to go and stuff like that. But this, you look at the at halftime, surely would have been one for the goal difference, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. This is one they should have racked up four or five. At the end of the game, there was times where they were just taking the wrong decisions in the final third. Back in complacency, possibly, because they're already easily winning. I don't know if this, we mentioned before, obviously, we came on about Gerrard's use of subs. I don't know if this was one they needed to try and get players on who had a point to prove, and were looking to get in on the act with the goals and things like that. This probably was maybe the game for them, but yeah, I mean, they've won 2-0. They've looked under absolutely zero pressure whatsoever. You take that result, but you're probably a little bit disappointed that you've not given them a bit of a doing, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think Gerrard was critical of his players just for their lack of clinicality and kind of for their mercy, I suppose, to Hamilton, and I think, yeah, it could obviously affect them in the latter stages of the season. But yeah, like you said, Christy, I do think they probably should have made subs. But the benefit for them is that they're going into an international break at least, so a fair amount of their players are getting a break anyway.
Yeah, you mentioned about sort of players making an impact there. I thought Brandon Barker had a decent chance in the second half, and especially against the fullbacks that he was up that Hamilton had, who also didn't have a particularly good game, especially Scott McMahon, who had to get himself sent off. I thought he could have got a goal for sure, and this was surely one of a game where he could have really stake a claim in actually starting for Rangers.
He looks really good until it comes to doing anything important, such as making the right pass, getting the right shot off, pulling the ball across, getting the cross off. He can beat people with will, but when it comes to the fight, like when it comes to final ball, it just doesn't exist.
Yeah,
I can see why Gerrard obviously sees something in him more than the likes of Greg Stewart, Jordan Jones. These kind of guys who didn't really get an opportunity last year. Gerrard's obviously given him a chance, probably more due to sort of Hadji kind of dropping off, and obviously with Morelos and Eaton and Aribo. So I can see why, but he just doesn't look like the quality of player who's going to do it often enough.
Maybe he is the type of guy that will be able to create sort of chances and stuff like that against a side like Hamilton. But again, someone that didn't really had a couple of chances as well, as Kemar Roof didn't take any of them. Is that a disappointment that he's not managed to get himself on the score sheet?
Did he not have the header that came off the bar for
the first one? I think he did, or he did. He might have hit the bar in the second half as well.
He had a a couple of headers in the second half, but yeah, nothing too close.
Still involved at least, but I think that this is one that the Rangers might look back on a little bit disappointing that they didn't rack up the scoreline.
Yeah, I guess you can look at it in the sense that it's still early enough in the season, some more minutes in the legs after quite a long sort of time off. And I guess the 1-2-0 with barely breaking a sweat and barely having a chance created against them. So it's being maybe a wee bit harsh going overly critical on them. But that defence...
The lack of chances created against them is huge. I mean, I can't think of many sort of clear-cut chances that the teams have created. I think there was one that St Johnstone, the striker, totally forgotten his name, the striker that they got on loan from Millwall. Yeah, he went through sort of with a one-on-one, but again, they recovered it. So they are, I think the guy for, I can't remember his name either, the guy they got from The Athletic, he put up an article about sort of their use of tactical fouls to stop opponents, and I think that's big, sort of protecting the central defence, especially with that, something like Hollander, who does lack that little bit of pace, that sort of protects them from teams getting in behind, so they're making full use of that at the minute as well.
Yeah, I guess if you kind of look at how tight their defence is, I don't think they've had an XG against them of like over 0.5. A lot of them are down even in the sort of like the 0.20s, even some in the 0.1s, looking at Aberdeen. But yeah, they're pretty tight at the back. I guess they'll be full of confidence going into the fixtures after the international break. We'll move on to Sunday now, where we'll start with Celtic, who they came into this one after the massive disappointment for them of being knocked out of the Champions League on Wednesday night. Was it Wednesday night or Tuesday night? I can't actually remember.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Yeah. 2-1 defeat at home to Ferencvaros, is that how it's pronounced?
Anyway,
it's 3-0 win at home to Motherwell. Again, quite an odd game looking back on it. I don't think Celtic were great. I think they were gifted a few of their goals. But to look at Motherwell still without a win this season, the only side yet to win. They've only scored 2 goals. What do Motherwell need to do to get out of this sticky
Stop
situation?
That's one.
Yeah, one of the things they need to do is they need to find a settled defence and one that can actually coordinate, because there's multiple occasions throughout this game where they're not working as a unit. I already pointed it out to you guys before we started recording, but the second goal, and there's a lot of issues with it prior to this, but if you watch it, when Ayers got the ball, Forrest makes a run, and you can see O'Donnell, Gallagher and Mugabe shift right, but then Grimshaw doesn't, and it just leaves a Yeti standing clear on his own. I said this is one of the easiest goals he could possibly score, able to take 2 touches and then smash it in.
At the same time, what are you thinking playing Liam Grimshaw, who was a functional defensive midfielder, as a left wing back?
Yeah, I know it's
madness.
It just seems odd. I don't know why Stephen Robinson feels the need to be shoehorning players in.
If you don't have players to play wing back, then don't play them.
Exactly. And it doesn't suit Motherwell, and they got completely exposed in that game.
Yeah, that to me is quite a worry, because you'd have maybe thought that if you signing Ricky Lamy, he could be someone that potentially step in a left wing back as well as left centre back. But if you even just said that for argument's sake, and you look at the bench, there's I think it's Barry Maguire is the only central defender that was.
Even then, I think he's more of a holding midfielder.
Yeah, that wasn't used. In fact, the only one on the bench. That's a worry in terms of squad depth.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that. I mean, we've criticised Liam Grimshaw, and yes, he's been played out of position. But if you watch him for the first and third goal, he's just jogging back. His team's in transition, and he's out of position. That's unacceptable. But then, Christy, you were going to, I think you were going to point out Ricky Lummy for the first goal.
Yeah, Ricky Lummy's body position is terrible. He's basically square to Forrest. Show him where you want him to go. I mean, you want him to go outside, but you're not doing that whatsoever, and then you almost get out his way to let him take the shot. It's utterly baffling what he's done. I mean, he's very exposed, as we said, by Grimshaw. Forrest stays wide where the rest of the defence is come across. McGabby could possibly close the gap between the two, but it's all in Lammy's body position that's allowed Forrest to get the shot off. In fair play, Forrest, it's one of those sort of typical Forrest finishes coming in off the right hand side. But if Lammy gets a little bit closer and sorts out his body position, he has to, you know, Forrest either has to make the pass or take him on, and it's like the defending. It's like passive defending that you would do in a training drill. That's the best that I can give him credit for. It's horrendous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought Motherwell basically played it that way. They were completely lacking intensity. There's a few chances, and we're gonna get onto it. But Klamala misses a couple. One in particular. There's a loose ball they fail to collect in midfield, and then O'Donnell has the chance to knock the ball out. And just doesn't even make contact, and it comes through for Greg Taylor, cuts it back, and Klamala misses, I mean, a fairly easy chance, but not as easy as the one he misses later. And I thought that just summed up Motherwell, just completely off the pace, and didn't want it.
Yeah, it's quite sort of simple to say, but they didn't look like they didn't want it. I was going to say it couldn't be arsed, I guess that's a bit harsh, but yeah, I think they just look so passive, as you say, and as a supporter, that's the last thing you want to see when your team pitches up at Celtic Park, your players just going through the motions. Well, I guess is to touch on that Lennon went with the exact same starting 11 as he did in the week, the strikerless or Christian false nine sort of team selection. He changed that at half-time, and I don't think they were particularly good. Well, overall, but I thought they were pretty bad in the first half. Is that an indication that he's admitting he got it wrong?
I think he started with it to try and prove that he didn't get it wrong, and he changed it at half-time because he realised that it just clearly, and obviously they got the goal, but it just clearly wasn't working.
Yeah.
I thought as well, when they did have Klamala on, and I know he missed chances, but they looked markedly better, and I thought on top of that, when Ayeti came on, they looked even better having the two strikers on, because yeah, I mean, matching up against Motherwell, they just couldn't live with the movement of the two of them. I think Klamala, to be fair to him, does deserve credit for the movement that he was offering up.
Yeah, his movement's got a lot to do with both the second and the third goals. But again, like we said, the second goal's so passive, and the big part of that is the fact that Ryan Christie is able to get out of that with Alan Campbell. He should not still have the ball at this stage. It's really, really poor from Campbell. And then once Christie gets the switch to Ayer, there's just so much space for him there. Forrest makes a run to take out one of the midfielders. Klamala makes a run. Grimshaw's not tucked in. And Jett is all the time in the world. And if you give a striker who we know can score goals like that all that time, then you're just asking for him to score.
That's like you mentioned there about that situation. That's Alan Campbell's the last sort of player you'd expect to be sort of giving that away. You thought he'd be one that would show a bit of bite, but just to round off on something that I thought that typified that Motherwell a bit and this sort of passive nature is, I know it was offside at the time, but Tony Watt gets sent through on one-on-one, right? And he tries to lob the goalkeeper when he really should just be sort of side-footing that into the net. It just was just, it was lazy, and I know it's offside, doesn't really matter, but it actually, like, it just shows a bit of sort of fight, and he looked like he couldn't be arsed, and he pretty much, I think he actually laughed it off when he was offside, like, yeah, quite a worry for Motherwell. The only...
Hooked after an hour as well.
Yeah, I think there is some desperate need for reinforcements in that team. The only positive, I guess, is they didn't have the old David Turnbull situation where he comes on and just to sort of rub the salt into the wounds. But anyway,
yeah, I think that this international break couldn't have come at a better time for Motherwell, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. Give them some
time.
They've
got the only thing is obviously for working on things they've got. I think a few people away. I don't know. I can't remember if Campbell's still eligible from the 21s for reason of the squad, but obviously you've got Gallagher and O'Donnell that'll be away. And Hasty might be in the 21s, although that shouldn't matter because he's been absolute trash since returning.
We'll move on to the final game of the weekend, Sunday afternoon. Hibs nil, Aberdeen 1. Lewis Ferguson getting the only goal through a penalty. I think it's been kind of roundly said that this is probably the best Aberdeen have played in potentially a year almost.
I reckon the calendar year. Yes, it is.
They were. This was a big game, especially after getting a couple of wins in the league and in Europe for Aberdeen, and come up against a Hibs side who were yet to be defeated, and it was, I thought Aberdeen were really good in this game. I would say they were amazing. There was definitely some faults in their performances, you could say, but yeah, I thought they were really good.
Well, what I would say is, and I didn't see the whole game actually, but I thought that this was the first time in a long time. I mean, recently we've seen it in patches, but Aberdeen were willing to actually play through the midfield, the centre of the pitch. And I think a lot of that has to do with the presence of McCrory in there. He actually allows Aberdeen to do that. He's got a little bit more quality on the ball than probably the rest of Aberdeen's central midfielders. And yeah, it really has made a difference to the way that Aberdeen can kind of approach going forward.
And I thought it made Ferguson better as well, playing alongside him. He had a partner that you could almost trust if he goes forward. He's got me covered, and vice versa. And someone else, you know, who's not going to shirk at a tackle, who is going to be progressive with the ball, that you can always look for to find alongside him. I think there was a heat map shown up that those two, their regular positions were very, very close to each other, and that was a huge part of Aberdeen winning the battle of the midfield. In fact, they didn't just win it, they absolutely dominated that midfield. We'll probably get on to Hibs' midfield, but that shows what happens when you've got two combative players who are also very good on the ball.
Yeah, when I said there was a wee bit false, I think it's, you can put that down to this new shape that Aberdeen are playing. And I think Thursday night was the first time they kind of utilised that, and this 3-4-3, so that players always will need time to get adjusted to a new system, but it's 100% worth sticking with it. I think this is, McInnes has found his system to go with, and I think a large part of this working so well is actually Marley Watkins. I wasn't entirely convinced when he signed, I wasn't sort of sure what he was like anymore after a few years with some injuries, but I thought he was really impressive in this game.
Absolutely, but I also think the selection of the wing backs helps as well when you've got two defensively capable but more forward thinking wing backs with plenty of pace and that are able to carry the ball long distances and are comfortable to take people on. I think that's a big part of it. But having that focal point of Watkins, who can drift wide and links up really well with Hedges and Scott Wright is a massive benefit. And he puts in a power of work, as is seen by when he wins the penalty.
Yeah, and as well as him coming in and playing well, I think Hoban coming in at the back as well for Aberdeen, I think he adds a calmness almost to the back three. And I think I almost feel when Ash Taylor plays, there's a wee bit of panic that sets in, even when he doesn't even have the ball. So I think that's a massive plus for Aberdeen. But in terms of Hibs, a disappointing performance from them, really. They were okay in the first half, probably when they created their best chances in the game, but you wouldn't really say there was, other than Doidge's chance, there was anything that worried Joe Lewis too much.
Yeah, I mean, I think that certainly in the first half they had the better of the game, but again, they're lacking, similar to Dundee United almost, which is odd because they seem to have a lot more firepower on paper. They just don't seem to be penetrating enough. And what I did quite like about Hibs in the first half, I have to say, is when they receive the ball in transition from deep, they've got the ability to spring a counter really well, their midfield, with the likes of Allen. But they just could never finish off. And that chance you pinpointed there for Doidge, it's a really big one. Because even if Allen takes it on himself, that's a really high percentage chance from the edge of the box with that much space from Hoban. But even with Doidge, he's got plenty of space to operate within, and it needs to be on target. It's not really acceptable to miss like that.
Yeah, that finish from Doidge was the Doidge we saw under Heckenbottom, just lashing out at shots. Really, really disappointing from someone who we saw really come on to a game. Especially initially, when Jack Ross came in charge, dropped off a little towards the end. But you do, when he is your main striker, you look for a lot more composure than that. He's presented with a really good opportunity, and he's totally rushed it and just lashed it over the bar.
Yeah, I think to your point, Rory, that you were saying early on, with Aberdeen still adapting to the system, there definitely were issues in transition, and the players are definitely still learning those roles. They were caught out of position a few times, but again, Hibs just didn't seem to commit as many bodies into the box as they needed to kind of capitalise on that.
Yeah, something we kind of pointed out when we're sort of previewing the games and stuff like that. Scott Allen, this is beginning, this, if I was a Hibs supporter, I'd be beginning to get a wee bit worried about his performances, because I'm not sure if he's been up to it so far this season.
No, not at all. I think, if I remember rightly, you used to have a thread about these things, and I will throw it in there. Myth. Without willing runners around him, Scott Allen is rendered, I don't want to say pointless, but his impact on the game is diminished, because you don't have those players winning the ball back up high, where he can, then you can give it to him to receive it, and he can look to exploit spaces on the counter attack, whereas he's now having to come a lot deeper to win the ball, and that's just down to the fact that the Hibs midfield now, compared to the one he used to play in, is less mobile, less combative, and just generally he's playing with poorer players at the minute.
I never thought I'd have the comparison in my mind of Scott Allen and preheating the oven, but yeah, there we go. That's a couple of myths that is thrown in together. But yeah, I'm a bit concerned. I'm not sure whether Jack Ross should be kind of we thought he'd have to maybe revolve his team around Scott Allen to get the best out of him, and it just doesn't seem to be A, getting the best out of him, and then B, getting the best out of the players around him. In terms
I
of
feel like the system doesn't really suit Scott Allen. Like Christy said, I mean, the runners from midfield is essential to get the best from him. There were little glimpses that he was kind of up for it. Darted in ahead of Hedges and cut one back in the first half, but yeah, I just don't think that this system really suits him.
I said group chat, whereas, like you said, that sort of 3-5-2 where he does have to do a bit of wide defensive work doesn't really suit him. He's much better when in a kind of the head of a 4-3-3 with the midfield, where the wingers are doing the wide defending for him, and he can stay forward or, you know, sit on the kind of deepest line midfielder and has to do less defensive work. But when he does have to drift wide and do a little bit more coming back, he's just really not good enough at it. He's not strong enough. He doesn't have the engine for it. If you do play him, he has to sort of, he's kind of one here where he has to play a specific role in a specific system. Otherwise, you're not going to get the best out of him.
That's three league wins on the bounce now for Aberdeen, lifting them into fourth, I think it is now. After only playing four games, so we'll finish off the league.
They've actually, you know, we kind of slagged them off in a couple of wins, but we'll throw in the European game as well. They've actually gotten progressively better, I feel, in every single game so far. You maybe discount slightly the European game because the level of opposition was really, really poor. But they have progressively, let's say, progressively gotten better. And they said, I want to whisper it, but perhaps McInnes has kind of learned how to coach a team to play three at the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems,
finally.
It seems like his dreams have come true. We'll finish off the podcast with a wee bit on Scotland. Obviously playing Israel on Friday night. So just kind of to preview that, we're going to run through, I guess not really what we expect the team to be, rather what we'd personally like the team to be. Who wants to kick us off with their 11?
Sure, I'll go for it.
On you go.
Yeah, so I definitely don't think this is what's going to happen. I think Steve Clarke prefers to set up with a back four, but for me, with the personnel available, I think that it would make the most sense to have a back three. So I would set up with McLaughlin in goals, currently playing. I think he's a really good goalkeeper. My back three would be McKenna, Cooper and Kieran Tierney, playing as your left centre back. And then Robertson at the left wing back, and then O'Donnell on the right. My central midfielders would be McGinn, McTominay and Armstrong. And then I'd kind of have Christie playing off of Dykes.
Yeah, I think it's the front two's a difficult sort of choice of what we're going to do in the striking department. Christy, how about your 11?
Yeah, mine is fairly similar to Harry. I dropped out O'Donnell for Forrest as the right wing back. Got a little bit more attacking, and I initially had, and I'll go sort of, I'll split between the two of McTominay and Fleck playing the deeper sitting midfield role. I really do hope we get to see one of the two with McGinn and Armstrong ahead of them. I think that's probably our strongest midfield combination. I mean McGinn, someone who I was always been a little bit sceptical of, but over the last year I've began to see, and he's really turned it on for Scotland as well. And Armstrong, when the English Premier League came back after the break, he was fantastic for Southampton. But the only thing is, I mean, he was kind of as an inside right sort of role as well.
But I would like to see that too as the middle. And I think that the only real option for the forward areas is Christie playing off of Lyndon Dykes. It's clear that we've recruited Dykes and he is going to play, especially in these games with the lack of attackers. And if he does play, that's him locked in. So I think he's definitely going to play, and McLaughlin over Marshall, because he's played five clean sheets. He's playing for a winning team, so I'd probably go with him.
Yeah, kind of similar. The only change is my back three, so I've went with McLaughlin and the sticks. Back three of Tierney, McKenna, and I've actually put McTominay in there. I think you might not like that one, Christy, but I shudder at the imbalance of three left-footed central defenders. So that's the sole reason he's in there, because Declan Gallagher is having a pretty poor season, so
yeah.
I wouldn't be trusting him.
The only thing that McTominay is, I remember him being pretty shit in one game for Man United, playing a back three, I think, away at West Ham.
Oh,
probably Mourinho's Man United.
Yeah.
Wait. McTominay didn't have a bad game under Mourinho. Let's remember that one.
Yeah, because they don't give him these weird Player of the Year awards.
Managers, Player of the Season. Yeah.
But I do remember him being pretty poor. And I think he sort of kept everybody on side for one goal. I know that Tierney's obviously played it a little bit with Arsenal and a bit more used to it, but I'd be worried with playing sort of two little bit kind of unnatural players in the centre of defence. So that's why I'd gone with Cooper. But like you said, I wouldn't go with Gallagher at the minute because he's been pretty pants this season.
Yeah, then the wing-backs of Forrest, Robertson. Centre midfield, I've went for Fleck and McGinn. Armstrong just off of Dykes and Christie. So potentially even see him, Christie and Armstrong sort of swapping about. Maybe that could be something that's quite interesting. But
yeah, I was going to say, I think Armstrong and Christie give you the option to kind of change mid-game, because Armstrong can drift out wide and Christie likewise. So yeah, it gives you a bit of flexibility.
Yeah.
Well, another option there, obviously, we were talking about St Johnstone, the 3-4-3, would be to sort of have them both more advanced, have that midfield of, let's say, McTominay / Fleck and McGinn, and then you can have Armstrong playing that sort of inside right role that he'd been playing really well for with Southampton, and having Christie coming in from the left.
Mm. So I guess...
wouldn't mind seeing that.
Yeah, I'm just really interested to see where Armstrong plays, because I think you could potentially say either him or Tierney, since the Premier League came back after the break, that they were the outstanding Scottish players, even ahead of Andy Robertson. So given all our...
Not Ryan Fraser, no?
Nah, and he can stay out the Scotland squad as long as he wants, because I don't particularly like him. Yeah, I think that's quite a controversial one, but I'm not a massive fan. But given that we've all went three at the back, absolutely no doubt that Steve Clarke will somehow go for a four at the back formation and prove us all wrong.
If it's four at the back, does it have to be... I think he's surely got to be Tierney right back. I don't want to see him in the... I actually saw someone suggest a team that had McTominay and Tierney as the central defenders of a back four, and you're just like, oh, fuck no.
Yeah. No.
That's just mental.
I think Tierney playing at centre-back, I mean, it's not the greatest option, but given the current options on the books, it might be one of the best. I remember him playing centre-back in a back four against Holland for Scotland once, yeah, and having a decent performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
I think he played a couple of times the centre of a back four for Brendan Rodgers when he was sort of kicking about with the team in his early days, but he's not played it for three, four years, and I'd just be a little bit worried about throwing heaps of players in out of position.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely not McTominay and Tierney.
No. Yeah, the less we say about that Holland game, the better, I say.
Oh, yeah, I forgot who managed this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think? What do you think we should be looking at as a return from these games? I mean, is it should we be looking at 4 points probably?
Is the Denmark game? I thought it was a friendly. I don't know.
Czech Republic.
Oh, Czech Republic. Yeah, I don't know where I've got Denmark from.
There's no friendlies. So this is going to be two games, but the next two internationals. The next international will be three games, including obviously the game against Israel for the Euro qualifiers. And if we win that, then the next lot of internationals will be three games as well. So I would personally use this game as one to try a few things to see what we want to do for the playoffs against Israel as a sort of a finding them out a little bit, even though we've played them so much. In recent years, but obviously totally different management from when we last played them. I mean, I'd almost use these two games as almost friendlies and trial games for the Nations League, for the Euros qualifiers, because they are the all important part, and this is making sure we make the Euros next summer.
Yeah, I think 4 points would be an acceptable return from these two games.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think the Czech Republic this is probably one of the worst Czech Republic teams for a long time.
Did they beat England last year?
Maybe.
I think they beat England in the qualifiers away from home.
Really? But in terms of personnel, I don't think that they're nearly at the same level as they have been in previous years. But yeah, I mean, fair enough. If they did get a result like that, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'd certainly be expecting a win against Israel, and then see what we can come up with against Czech Republic.
Yeah. No Thomas Rosicky in their ranks anymore. But yeah.
Great player.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week to look back on the Scotland games, so I guess probably maybe the same time, give us some time to reflect on the two games. But yeah, as always, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.